Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to yet another episode of Sour Graps. Pulling double duty, triple duty with the holiday stream. We just did a holiday stream. It was a lot of fun. All the Fightful characters hanging out. Like a big old crossover episode of all of your favorite cartoons. I did that, and last night I did a special Christmas episode where I shat all over a bunch of Christmas carols. And then I watched 1 minute and 40 seconds of the Big Show Show Christmas special. It was only a minute and 40 of it because that's all I could take before I had to shut the damn thing off. It's bad. If you want a more in-depth, only slightly more, because they hated it too. If you want a more in-depth review of it, you should watch The Distraction from today, because Joe Holbert and Jeremy Lambert at least gave you a full synopsis of what went on in the thing. Apparently, right after I turned it off, Big Show fell off the roof. But it wasn't even that impressive. That's how bad it was. You did a whole episode about a giant man falling off a roof, and it wasn't good. It's hard to do. Here's what else is hard to do. TLC, for all the things about it that I didn't love, and there were only a few. Like, booking-wise, a lot of stuff made sense. We'll get to why my one major problem with it. Later in this episode. But from a purely storytelling standpoint, TLC left a lot of good directions available. Like, we could go here or here. There's this new thing. We got new Raw tag champs. Where's that going to go? A lot of interesting directions that we could be going. Let's find out. Where all the... No, just kidding. No new directions. Just no nude erections either. Because this episode of Raw did not make me horny. It is the opposite. It's a flaccid maker. It's terrible. Because they just didn't do anything. Like, they had an opportunity to do some things after a lot of people really loved TLC. Like, I liked it a lot. For what it was. I mean, you'll never get to me to say anything really bad about most of the people who wrestle for WWE. They're the best wrestlers in the world, by and large. And if you give them time in the ring and let them go, let them tell a story, let them do good moves, it's always going to be good, bell to bell. It's the other shit that ruins WWE. So that's a problem. Because you could have done whatever you wanted to coming out of Sunday night. People were excited. New fun things to do. Instead, so much of the same old crap. Also, Alexa Bliss has a swing set now. That's the major new development coming out of Raw. Alexa Bliss has a swing set now. There you go. Bet you're glad you watched those 3 hours. So let's talk about this everything in order. I don't want this to be super long because I went like an hour, 45 to 50 minutes last night and an hour and a half on this Christmas stream, which was a lot of fun, honestly. But my office chair isn't the most comfortable, so I don't need to be here for another hour and a half. Cut to me talking about Raw and TLC for an hour and 45 minutes. It's just going to happen because I can't stop myself. Here we go. So remember how I said, here's what's going to happen. You had the whole damn feud was built around Lana being put through tables by Nia and to a lesser extent Shayna. This whole fucking thing for months, literally months, up to 3 months almost, of just them torturing Lana over and over and over again forever. So, of course, Lana doesn't even factor into it when there's a tag title match that comes out of it. Like, Lana got taken under her wing by Asuka, who took pity on her for whatever reason. I'm not going to go into it again. I already laid out all the reasons why Lana is not a good, canonically, is a bad character. Like, people, you're supposed to not like her. If she's not actively being, like, bad toward people, she's terrible at her job, or annoying as hell. She's, the only thing that changed was that, like, Natalia didn't want to be her friend anymore, and then the big lady started picking on her. That's it. But she didn't change. She's not a different person now. She's the same person she's always been, and we've always hated her. But for some reason, Asuka found something to like in her, and I guess we're supposed to go, oh, isn't Asuka magnanimous? I suppose she is. But Asuka was like, okay, you're my best friend now, and let's, you and me, we're going to challenge for the women's tag team titles. What's that? Lana got all of her limbs were broken in one segment, and now she can't wrestle? Okay, well, guess we're going to have that match anyway without the one person who the story was about. Lana was by far the most important person in the story. You took her out of it, and she's not even in the story anymore, but the story continues without her. That's a really weird thing to do. So the story is now Asuka's got to find somebody else to be her partner. And although I really enjoyed at TLC, Billie Kay pitching herself as Asuka's partner, the only person she'd be pitching, she's on SmackDown, and she's pitching herself to Asuka as a tag partner. If you're going to pitch yourself, Billie Kay, to anybody on Raw as a tag partner, you should pitch yourself to Peyton Royce, because they broke you up for no fucking reason, and I'll tell you why later. Asuka says, no, the position has been filled, so we all knew because it was spoiled on the internet, but I also predicted it. I said last week that Asuka's mystery partner is going to be Charlotte because she's due back any day now. And of course, because the thing that makes the least sense is always the thing they're going to do. So Asuka comes out. Nobody knows who's the mystery partner. And then Charlotte's music starts to play. And the up on the Titantron, it's Charlotte's name and a big diamond underneath it. It's obviously her Tron. It's her music. It's her Tron. And yet still, I got motherfucking Byron Saxton going, could it be? Oh my God, do you think? Is it really? I can't believe it could possibly be. It is. We fucking know, Byron. We fucking know. Somehow that's not the dumbest thing Byron Saxton said at TLC. Fucking Byron Saxton. Jesus. So Charlotte came out. And my thought was, it's going to be Charlotte. I just hope that they do the smart thing and have Charlotte turn on Asuka immediately. Like in the match, early in the match, just pull a Flair to Sting. Remember that? She's a Flair after all. Where like Flair spent weeks convincing us and Sting that he was a good guy so that he and Sting could have a tag match against whoever the fuck it was, Luger and Arn Anderson maybe? I don't know. And like Sting's in there getting all the heat from the heels. He's in there the whole time. Babyface and Peril finally makes a hot tag. Flair tags in, dances around the ring, does his whole, like, I'm doing a hot tag and I'm Ric Flair dance. And then he punches Sting in the mouth and turns on him. And that's what I hope. I thought, honestly thought they were going to do a full-on callback to that. They have Asuka in the ring for the entire beginning of the match. Charlotte fake like she was going to get in and punch Nia, but never actually do it. And then Asuka tags in Charlotte, who just beats the fuck out of Asuka and walks up the ramp. And Nia and Shayna go, cool, I'll pin her then. And they do. And then it becomes Charlotte versus Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. Because they should not be friends. It's a dumb idea for them to be friends. Why are they friends? Right? Somebody keeps on saying, well, the reason that Charlotte would team with Asuka is because Nia Jax is the person who put her out for 6 months. Remember? She broke her arm, canonically, in kayfabe, backstage, in a segment where she beat her up, and said that took Charlotte off TV so she could go and have surgery. So it would only make sense for Charlotte to want revenge on Nia. Yes. Good. I am with you. Why the fuck would Asuka want to be partners with Charlotte? Why wouldn't Asuka hate Charlotte? Why wouldn't Asuka detest Charlotte, despise Charlotte, loathe Charlotte? Why would Asuka not go to sleep every night and wake every morning cursing the very name of Charlotte Flair? Give me one good fucking reason why Asuka should fucking hate Charlotte Flair. Asuka's undefeated streak ended at the hands of Charlotte Flair. Asuka was made to look pretty bad in that match. Like, she wasn't even on Charlotte's level, in my opinion. Like, it felt like they were toning down all the things Asuka could do, because we'd seen her in NXT beating everybody for years and being great at it. And then finally she gets called to the main roster. Oh, we're going to feed you to Charlotte. Like, it was a competitive match, but it was like, well, the only reason it's competitive is because Asuka's not doing anything. Now, obviously, that's the booker. But she can't be mad at the booker in kayfabe. She's got to be mad at the woman who ended her streak. Not only that, but then, a year later, whatever it was, she is the SmackDown Women's Champion, having won the belt in a ladder match, a triple threat, right? Wasn't it at TLC? Or the Royal Rumble, I think? Where she beat Charlotte and Becky Lynch to become SmackDown Women's Champion. So she got some of her revenge there. Still doesn't like Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair has never, ever, ever wrestled a match versus Asuka where Charlotte Flair did not do something underhanded in that match. Then, a week before WrestleMania 2019, whatever the fuck it was, Charlotte beats her on an episode of SmackDown to become SmackDown Women's Champion so they could put the SmackDown Women's Championship on the line as well as the Raw Women's Championship and shoehorn Charlotte into the triple threat match between Becky and Ronda. What happened to Asuka? Well, Asuka didn't have a match at Mania. And who's to blame for that? Obviously, it can't be the bookers, because that's not a person you can be mad at in kayfabe. In kayfabe, who's to blame for that? Charlotte, for beating Asuka. Asuka must hate Charlotte. Every time she gets in the ring with Charlotte, Charlotte fucking screws her over. That should be Asuka's view of it. Also, the last time I believe these two actually had a match together was at TLC last year, December 2019, where Asuka and Kairi were tag champs, and Charlotte dropped Kairi, who is canonically, again, Asuka's very best friend in the business, dropped her on her goddamn head, and then played rough with her afterwards. When has Asuka ever had a reason to not fucking hate Charlotte's guts? Why does it make any sense for Asuka to be like, hey, you know, I need a tag partner. You know what I'm going to call? My old pal Charlotte. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. Let me get on my old phone here. Hey, Char, how would you like to be my tag partner? You would? Great. See you there. Why would that be a thing that happens? Why? If you say, we got to have Charlotte be Asuka's tag partner. You say, Asuka, you have to find a tag partner. If you don't find one by the deadline is noon on Sunday, we will find one for you. Have Adam Pearce relay that message. And Adam Pearce, you have recorded earlier today. Adam Pearce comes up to Asuka. Have you found a tag partner? And then you could do like Billy Kay's like there, like, ah, that could be me, right? And then Asuka's like, ah, no, I haven't found a tag partner. And Adam Pearce says, you know what? I got the perfect person. And then you have Charlotte come out. And Asuka's just as surprised as we are because she didn't know who her partner was going to be until Charlotte comes down. And as soon as Asuka sees Charlotte, Asuka gets pissed because she fucking hates Charlotte because Charlotte has done nothing but screw her over. Now you have a will they be able to coexist storyline, but it makes fucking sense because Charlotte's only ever been out for Charlotte and Asuka hates Charlotte. So there you go. They don't have to do the immediate thing like I wanted, which is for her to pull a her dad on Asuka's version of Sting and turn on her partner during the match. You don't have to do that, but it would sure make sense. Asuka and Charlotte win the women's tag team titles, and then they embrace. They're so happy. They're such good friends, you know. We've seen them be so friendly in the past. Old friends, you know. Best friends. Now, in an interview they did after TLC, they interviewed the two of them. So, Asuka, what led you to choose Charlotte to be your partner? And she says, well, with Lana out, I knew I needed the best, Charlotte. Which, okay, like, if you want to say, like, and we've said, certainly, according to the rule book of WWE, Charlotte Flair equals best women's wrestler ever. I mean, like, that's a fact, according to WWE. She's great. She's definitely one of the best ever. I'm not saying she's not. I'm just saying they treat it as a fucking, according to Hoyle, absolute fucking fact that it's inarguable is how they view it. And Charlotte, when they asked, what did you think when Asuka asked you? And she launched into this whole like weird, like, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. She didn't say, I don't buy it. I said, I don't buy it while I was watching her say, you know, I have such respect for her. What a warrior she is. I've been watching her on Raw and she's had to go through so much. And I said, you know what? What an honor it is for a woman such as herself, who is such a warrior, so great, what an amazing champion, to want to pick me. Absolutely, I said yes. Right? So then, the next night, the very best thing I can say, the worst possible outcome for the match on Sunday was Charlotte taps out Shayna clean. And thank God that didn't happen. The second worst option is Charlotte pins Shayna clean. So that's what we got. At least she didn't tap out Shayna. There were a couple of moments in there because as far as I know, we haven't seen a lot of Charlotte versus Shayna stuff. So I'm still into that. Like, that's still a thing. I don't mind going there at some point. Shayna's going to lose that match, which is going to suck. So eventually I'll fucking hate it. But at the beginning could be a lot of fun. The Queen of Spades versus the Queen is a fun little thing to do. And Shayna doesn't back down from anybody, or at least shouldn't. I'm remembering the shit that I saw Shayna do in NXT. Maybe she could just bite Charlotte Flair in the neck. Maybe we'll just do that. That seems like a thing to do. Anyway, so they didn't really mention at TLC the fact that Nia Jax was the one to put Charlotte on the shelf. They did like, Nia Jax looks like she's seen a ghost, which is just a thing they say when anybody returns, no matter who's in the ring. But thankfully, the next night, when Charlotte comes out and says, you know, by herself, I believe, right? Doesn't she come out first? Yeah. She talks about, I've never been in the Thunderdome, and what would the Thunderdome be without the Queen? I don't know. You had a fucking months where the Thunderdome was in the Amway Center in Orlando. It worked out all right, I suppose. You keep telling me it's the award-winning Thunderdome. I guess it didn't need you when it was in Orlando. But now that it's in Tampa, what would the Thunderdome be without the Queen? It'd be fine. It would be fine. It did all right without you. She says, nothing has changed. Of course, I am the best ever. Basically, she wishes, I am the greatest women's wrestler ever. Everyone knows it. I am so great, and I am also so humble. Look at me humbly bragging about how I am the greatest women's wrestler ever. She says about, I was so, like, when a friend asks you to do something, that's a friend, and I am a friend. We are all friends. Friendly friends. We are friends. And I, like, when are they friends? Like, canonically, tell me when they became friends. Like, there was a point where Asuka didn't hate Charlotte, but that was also shitty booking. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was right before they had Becky turn on Charlotte and thought everyone was going to boo Becky. So at that point, they really didn't know how to fucking write the women's division if they thought everyone was going to turn on Becky for attacking Charlotte. Like, that was around the same time they were like, hey, Asuka wants to be friends with everybody because Asuka's crazy in Japanese. Am I right? So Asuka takes the mic when she comes out. She's got both of her titles. This is the thing. They need to stop doing this thing where the women's champion, singles champion, is also the women's tag champ. Just like have a fucking tag division. I know you don't want to. I know you don't. It's like you keep breaking up tag teams just to put the people who were in the tag team in different tag teams. Like you had a whole angle where Sonya Deville turned on Mandy Rose and you broke up that tag team. And now you put Mandy Rose in another tag team. You broke up the Iconics for no fucking reason. And now you put Peyton Royce in a new tag team with somebody who's definitely not Billy Kay for no fucking reason. You broke up the Iconic, the Riot Squad for a while, and now they're back together again. So I guess that's a good thing. Yeah. Just have a tag division of women or women who are below the title picture, but also good. They can compete for the tag belts. The whole point in having the women's tag belts is so that you have something for the other women to do. You know? Asuka comes out. Well, two belts, Asuka. Yes, of course. She's got both titles because that's all they like to do is that. Jax and Baszler come out. Then Flair is about like, friend to friend, I'd like to talk to you about your women's title. Your Raw women's title, your singles title, I would like to take that off you, please, friend to friend. And I'm like, fuck you, Charlotte. She's being patronizing and talking down to her friend, her partner, Asuka, who's done nothing but try to hold this fucking women's division together since Becky got pregnant and left. And since you went away for 6 months, Charlotte, she's basically been just this place. It didn't have to be that way, you know? Like, Asuka's been involved in this fucking Shayna and and Nia versus Lana feud for a while. Before that, she was mired in that whole thing with Sasha and Bayley crossing over into the Raw division because they would know for SmackDown. Like, you called up Bianca Belair to Raw in fucking like March. She made her debut at WrestleMania and you did nothing with her. Like, the entire time you have Asuka there, who is like the greatest NXT women's champion ever. And then you call up at around the same time as Asuka becomes champion, you call up Bianca Belair, who might be one of the most talented women to never hold the NXT Women's Championship. Like, Becky obviously is the one, if you're asking, of all the women who've been in NXT and then went to Raw or SmackDown, but never held the NXT title, who's up at the top? Well, it's obviously Becky, and then you'd say probably, what, Alexa? She has had many multiple title reigns, but like, as far as like the most just absolutely raw, talented person, it's Bianca. So here's a storyline. Best NXT Women's Champion ever. But the thing is, NXT is not canonical to them. It doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, NXT doesn't actually happen. It's a thing that happens elsewhere. Like, it's another company. It's like when Vince would hire somebody from TNA back in the day. Like, that ever fucking happened. We never talk about what happened because that was in another company. That didn't matter. There was an opportunity because you had, again, 6 months that Charlotte was gone and Becky was also not on Raw. And you had Asuka there at the top of the division and you had an opportunity to make other new stars. You had an opportunity. You had half a year. Don't tell me you had enough damn enough time. There is an Elseworld out there somewhere where Vince died of a heart attack related to steroids in 1998 and this thing pushed on without him. And by this point in this Elseworld, this other realm, an alternate dimension, people are actually being booked properly. There's another world out there somewhere, an alternate timeline where in the ring you had Rhea Ripley called up for the first time to Raw. And Bianca Belair is in the ring, Asuka's in the ring, and you have those three in the ring, and then we hear, for the first time in 6 months, Charlotte's music. Well, we hear, like, that's a fucking four-way I want to see. Two of the best young wrestlers you have, women's wrestlers you have in the company, Asuka, who's, like, an all-time great, and Charlotte, who is ostensibly the greatest women's wrestler who has ever lived. Like, you could do that, but you've been fucking around with Asuka this whole time. So now she's got to be tag champs with Charlotte. And that's all we got. So Shayna and Nia come out and they make jokes. They're not funny jokes. And Nia mentions for the first time, "Hey, how's that arm looking? Remember that arm I broke? How you doing?" So at least they're actually mentioning that on Raw. Thank you. Then Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, who they remind us are scheduled to face Nia and Shayna later tonight. They make it fucking like, "We don't hand out coal. We hand out beatings, seasons beatings." So Rose and Brooke try to come out. And they're like, "You guys look different. We look the same, but you look different. Oh, it's because you're not wearing the Raw women's, the women's tag titles. That's weird." And then Dana Brooke out of nowhere just says, "Shayna looks like Rudolph without the red nose," which I don't even know what that fucking means. She looks like a reindeer? Is that an insult? I guess. Then they say the only thing missing on Nia from looking like a reindeer is the antlers. What is this? Is it like insult reindeer day? I don't understand. So Flair decides she's going to make matches now because she's a Flair, so she could do that. Hey, Asuka, wouldn't you like to watch these two teams fight? Let's have them fight for our amusement. I am the queen. So we go to commercial and back, and here's the Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose match versus Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. That's going to go on for two segments because, you know, they really want to pop a good rating after last week. So they want to start off the match with something hot. That's Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke versus Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. Ooh, boy. Charlotte and Oscar are on commentary, and it's fucking insufferable. Like, I can't tell you. It's the idea that they are friends sickens me to my core. Like, they can't be. Like, Oscar can't look that weak that she would be friends with this person who has done nothing but hurt her time and time again. It makes her look stupid. So when Charlotte eventually does turn on Oscar, it's going to make her look even dumber that she didn't see it coming. Like, we're supposed to doubt Charlotte's actual, like, friendship bolt. They're laying on really thick. We're supposed to doubt it, which only makes Asuka look dumber. Baszler taps out Dana Brooke. Like, Mandy Rose looks good. Dana Brooke has improved, but I honestly don't give a shit. Here's the thing. Like, I love when the wrestlers actually who are on commentary decide, I'm going to work in some stuff to actually make things make sense, or at least fill in some holes, or mention stuff that you at home would know, but that these announcers aren't going to mention. She talks about how Dana Brooke used to be her protege, and now she's very, that's shit from, like, 2016, right? That's a long fucking time ago. That's a long time ago. I'm glad that she brought it up. Good for you, Charlotte. But I don't trust you for one stinking second. The Hurt Business bullies a guy backstage. The Hurt Business, again, remember when they're supposed to be, like, good guys for like a few weeks when they're facing retribution? That's funny. So, championship edition of the VIP lounge, because Cedric and Shelton won the titles off of Kofi and Xavier at TLC. It's a great match. They've had too many matches, but credit to those guys. They found a way to make it new and different and fun. I don't know how they did it, but they fucking did it. And Lashley didn't have a match, because why would he have a match? He's only the U.S. champion. But he's going to have a match at the next one. They're laying that on thick. So they keep doing the thing. Like, when Cedric won, he tagged himself in. Shelton was waiting to hit his big move, the pay dirt, on Kofi, waiting for Kofi to get up. And Cedric tagged himself in, went in, hit the lumbar check, and got the 1-2-3 on Kofi. And Shelton was like, okay, I guess. Go ahead, kid. And Cedric was celebrating as though he won the championships. And then he interrupted a Shelton part of the promo. I mean, those four guys in there, MVP is like the leader, basically the talker of the three. But the guy who's kind of like keeps everything going around, keeps everything on the tracks. It's a great force. It's one of the best stables they've created in a long time. All of that credit, I think, goes to MVP for making the whole thing work. But they all look great. Like, Bobby Lashley is U.S. champ. It's perfect. Shelton and Cedric work really well together. I really love them as a team. Shelton, like, is proving he can still go. Good for him. And Cedric looks so good. I mean, like, remember how bad he looked when he first got called up to Raw? Like, how badly they were booking him. Remember that one weird fucking night where, like, he got to pretend he was a janitor to help out Roman Reigns for no reason, and they forgot about it the next week? He's great. He was nowhere when he was hanging out with with Apollo Crews. And now he's great. But he thinks he's great. He thinks he's so great that he can interrupt his teammates' promos. And they're definitely playing it as though that they're reacting not well to him. Listen, as I said, this is a great faction. It's a great stable. It has legs to go a long time. A long time. Even as presently constituted, these four guys, Lashley is the top guy, Cedric and Shelton is the tag team, and MVP as the manager slash player coach. They have the ability to last a year, at least, at least. There's a lot of people like this. This is why it fucking did pains me. So, like, if you just kept Big E with the New Day, you get the New Day versus Bobby and Shelton and Cedric. You get that six man, and we get to have that like several times. It'll be really good every time, I promise. But you fucked that up. This team like has the ability to last a long time. You don't have to take anybody away. You don't have to add anybody to it. It's got legs. The fact that they're already teasing dissension in the ranks, it's too early. Don't do it yet. Please, I'm begging you. Cedric is just coming into his own as this badass athletic heel. It's really going to work for him. Don't fuck it up. WWE, I'm telling you. So, they get these calls are like the come up is over because Prime Alexander is here. He's calling himself Prime Alexander. We're the most dominant force in WWE, says Lashley, and blah blah blah. MVP invites a photographer to like commemorate the occasion with them all standing around with their titles. R-Truth runs in and photo bombs from you know standing in the background, but here comes all the R-Truth kids, you know, the Dorado and Titus O'Neil and Eric Tozawa, and they chase R-Truth all around the ring back up the stage, and Hardy and Riddle come out, and they're literally calling themselves the Hardy Bros. And Riddle literally talks about smoking weed. Well, just hanging out the house, get toasted, and listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, which is like, fucking don't do that. That guy's a fucking piece of work. But they're really gonna call him like Jeff and Riddle, alleged rapist Matt Riddle. They're really gonna call them the Hardy Bros, because they hate Matt Hardy that much for going to AEW, which is fucking awful. So why don't we have a tag match later, I guess? I don't know. Whatever. Drew Gulak lost to Angel Garza. Angel Garza is not on main event this week, so that's good, I guess. I forget what happens on main event. There's one thing I'll mention later, but I forget what the second match was. Who fucking cares, right? It's main event. But Angel Garza is a heel, but it's weird. They don't really know what to do with him, but I'm glad he's on TV again. He's really talented. So he beats Scarlett, Drew Gulak pretty quickly. It would be interesting, though I don't expect him to do this because I don't expect him to do anything right. They could have mentioned like Gulak and Garza were tag champs. Not tag champs, that's wrong. Were cruiserweight champs in 2019. Gulak was the title holder, and then he lost to Leo Rush. They wouldn't mention that, obviously, but Gulak and then another guy and then Garza. Like, that was the lineage of the Cruiserweight Championship. That's a big deal. Like, these are two former Cruiserweight champions having a match against each other, and I don't believe they ever had a match against each other. That's a cool thing. You could mention that. Is it against the rules to mention that? It shouldn't be. I know it happened in NXT, so fuck NXT, but right? Garza has an interview with Blonde, not Charlie. So not only is Garza cheating on his fiance, his now wife, with Charlie, he's now cheating on Charlie with Blonde, not Charlie. That guy cannot just keep, he just cannot keep his rose in his pants. Anyway, he talks to Blonde, not Charlie later. He like fakes out like he's going to kiss her under the mistletoe. Like, I'm pretty sure he took the mistletoe out of his trunks. That was a weird spot. But he holds it above them and he kind of like barely leans in, but then he walks away and like Blonde, not Charlie's like, oh, well, I don't know what to think. Okay. Charlie Caruso interviews AJ backstage. AJ's got a big old cut on his face because because he got it in his TLC match versus Drew and The Miz. Here's the main thing that I have a problem with in this match. And this match was a lot of fun to watch. A TLC triple threat match. It is a TLC match. No disqualification. Anything goes. Right? Why doesn't... If Omos is going to be at ringside with AJ, why isn't Omos carrying around, I don't know, a sledgehammer? Or a chainsaw? Or a flamethrower? Anything's fucking legal. Anything can be done. What, like, you have this, again, this very large, enormous individual man standing at ringside with AJ, and anything he does to Drew is entirely legal. It's entirely legal. He just walked up to Drew in the middle of the ring and punch him in the face as hard as he wanted to. He could pick up Drew and throw him wherever he wants. Like, Drew might try to stop him from doing that, but, like, hit him with a chair. Like, do whatever you want. You're way bigger than Drew, and anything you do to Drew is legal. Why aren't you doing everything to Drew? If you're going to be out there, you have to do that. Otherwise, the whole match doesn't make sense. Well, a match like this should be automatically won by whoever has the most friends. Well, you brought out your bodyguard. I got this tag team who's friends with me. Now it's 3-on-2. Oh, well, my bodyguard has a couple of the brothers. We brought him. Now it's 4-on-3. Oh, well, I happen to have this stable of 6 guys. Well, now it's 9-on-4. If there's no disqualification and there are other guys at ringside, those guys have to get involved. Otherwise, the match makes no sense. Would you believe that's not the most egregious failure of a hardcore rules match that happened in the ensuing 36 hours? Fuck me, man. At some point in the match, when Omos hasn't beat, like, there is nothing that prevents... I'm sorry, I'm going to get hung up on this. It bugged me so much. If AJ knocks Drew onto the mat, right? If Omos slides in and gets on top of Drew, mounts him, and just beats the hell, just pummels his face with the giant, huge, enormous individual man fists of his, beats Drew half to death with his bare hands, nobody can stop him. It's entirely legal. So why wouldn't AJ have Omos come in and start beating up Drew while AJ climbs the ladder and gets the damn belt? Like, when there's a ladder match involved, it makes zero sense to not have Omos get involved. It doesn't make any fucking sense. because he does get involved later. And there's no consequences for him getting involved. So it's not like they said, it's no DQ except for if Omos gets involved, well, then you lose, AJ. Like, that wasn't a thing. That was not a stipulation. So what the fuck? Miz cashes in the Money in the Bank briefcase, or did he? Because Morrison is actually the one who's carrying the briefcase, and he says, we're cashing in the briefcase. And so the ref does. And then at that point, AJ's gone through a table, and Drew has just been put through a table by The Miz. So The Miz, slowly and deliberately, looking up at the title belt that he is about to remove from the little dealy thing that hangs over the ring, he's looking up at admiringly at his new title he's sure to brandish very soon, and almost calmly gets in the ring, grabs him by the trunks, yanks him off the ladder. He lands like a little rockabye baby position, and he just dumps him over the ring ropes through a table on the outside. And after he's just done that, Morrison gets in the ring and hits him in the back with a chair as hard as he can, and the chair explodes. It's a great gimmicked chair spot. Morrison's reaction to it and Omos's reaction to it really sold the whole thing. So Omos gets to just to slowly chase a crawling Morrison up the ramp, which gets rid of Omos and gets rid of Morrison, which is a clever way of doing that. But again, the entire first half of the match, it was very easily won by AJ if Omos had got involved, and there was no reason for him not to. I hate that. Match is won when Drew is a thing. Like, there's some interesting spots after that point, but you never really believed that Miz had a chance. So Drew wins. Now, then the following night on Raw, AJ stops backstage, talks to Charlie Caruso. He's got a big old cut on his face. He's so angry about Miz cashing in. I want to. So Charlie says, why do you want to go? Why do you want to go on Miz TV? And I just says, well, I want Miz to explain himself. So he doesn't explain himself very well. But actually, he does. Like, there was a point where Miz, the thing of it is, Miz, is that you always do this all the time. Every time there's a Miz TV segment, it feels like now, they want you to recreate the promo you had on Talking Smack on Daniel Bryan, where you scream and yell about how you're disrespected. You're very good at it, but it's like it's just you playing the hits at this point. Like, I want to see you do other things. There are other notes you can hit, Miz. AJ says that you cashed in because of you, we both lost. Says that Money in the Bank contract was everything. Everything. 10 years ago, I cashed the Money in the Bank briefcase. I became WWE champion. I main event in WrestleMania, and that was going to happen again this year. I have fought for respect for 15 years. And if I got the WWE title again, maybe, just maybe, everybody here, you included, would respect me again. All I can do is try and make it right. I apologize now, and we were both robbed. I blew it. Yes, I understand. And so then like, it was an honest and really heartfelt like thing. Like you could, the way that he delivered the lines, like, it was a real good promo. But again, like, we've seen those notes before. Like, you know how you're a fan of a band and they have a really great song, and every single that they release after that song on every subsequent album, like, all of them sound a little bit like that really big hit they had 5 years ago. Like, there's not the same exact song, but like the chord progression is the same, or the guitar solo sounds eerily similar, or the beats per minute is identical. Like they're trying to recreate that thing that got them. And every other song that comes after, they're all good songs, but because they remind you so much of the first song, every single time new one that comes out is diminished in your eyes. Like if you looked at each song, it would be great in a vacuum, but because it seems to be copying their earlier work, maybe it's not so great. That's the Miz. That's the Miz in these promos. Every single one of them is very, very, very good. But in comparison to all the ones that come before it, it can only be less good because it's a copy of the one before that, which was a copy of the one before that, which was a copy of the one that got him all that praise. The Miz. Anyway, he makes a joke of it. He says, I apologize, and to make it up to you, I'm going to offer you and Omos a chance to star in the Marine 7. So, they're yelling at AJ and Morrison are yelling at each other about stuff. And AJ points out that you cash in the Money in the Bank. And like, oh my God, you're right. John cashed in the Money Bastard. I didn't do it. That means I didn't actually cash it in. I'm the one who's allowed to. That means I still have a Money in the Bank contract. I see where they're going with this. No takesies backsies, guys. You cannot go back on this. You fucked it up when you gave the damn briefcase to Otis. You fucked it up again when you had Otis lose the briefcase to The Miz because his tag partner and best friend of several years turned on him, and then you never followed up with that storyline. And you had Miz fuck it up by losing the briefcase. No tixies maxies. It's over. Move on. May is only a few months away. You can do it. You can have another chance to make things right. Are you going to fuck it up again? Of course you will. That's all you do. But you have another chance. Wait for that. Don't do this. This is bad. Drew McIntyre shows up and he says that he was celebrating with Sheamus and Keith and the lads. They got drunk and wrote a poem, and they wrote it on napkins. And it just looks like they didn't memorize their lines. And they had to have a reason why they didn't memorize their lines. But there's a poem. Remember the Nightmare Before TLC bullshit poem thing that Miz did? Well, this is the Nightmare After TLC, and it's just as bad. It's terrible. It sucks. So there's a brawl. It's such a bad segment. There's a one point where during the brawl, AJ drop kicks Lee, who staggers into Sheamus, who is about to do a bro kick to Morrison, I guess. And Sheamus reacts as though he just watched Keith Lee murder his dog. He is so angry at Keith Lee and can't understand why Keith Lee would do such a thing. You bumped into me. You nudged me slightly. Because of this, I am going to burn your entire hometown to the ground. And I'm going to piss on the ashes in front of you. That's how angry I am, says Sheamus. So Drew's trying to calm Sheamus down. And anyway. So T-Bar has a match against Ricochet. T-Bar wins because, as with all the matches, Slapjack is getting on the ring apron, and Ricochet has to deal with him, and then Ricochet has to deal with Mace, and then Ricochet gets dealt with by T-Bar, who hits the old feast your eyes move, the big knee from Dijak. So every member of Retribution has a singles victory over Ricochet now, which is good for Retribution and bad for Ricochet. Now, I don't know if anything's going to come of this, but Ricochet had a segment on Raw Talk last night that you absolutely need to go and find. It's him, like, coming to grips with all of his failures. He mentions how, like, he couldn't hold on to the U.S. Championship. He couldn't even touch Brock in their world championship match. He just feels like taking loss after loss. He couldn't really deal with the Hurt Business. I keep losing to Retribution. Something's got to change. I don't know what to do. And he's, like, emotional about it. Like, everybody who's like, well, Ricochet's terrible promo. Well, maybe that's because they're giving him shit that's bad to say. Because if you watch this, like, he is on the verge of tears. Like, it's some really fucking good acting. Acting is harder than reading shitty lines. You know what I mean? If they're like, here's your script, kid, say it word for word. It's hard to, like, actually inject real emotion and feeling and, you know, humanity. That's hard to do. It doesn't, like, even if you did, it would come off sounding robotic because it's not your fucking words and they're not actually, this was his words, man. It felt real. Like, just let Ricochet be himself. He'll be fine. I don't know what the end result of this is going to be. I do know that they had that weird mixed tag match a couple of weeks ago where Ricochet and Dana Brooke took on Slapjack and Reckoning. And Dana Brooke pinned Reckoning. So Reckoning is the weak link. Mia Yim is the weak link of Retribution. She did win versus Nikki Cross on Metro main event. So Nikki Cross, who is still owed a championship match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. She won a Fatal 4-Way, I believe, before Night of Champions, Clash of Champions, Clash of Champions, Nash of Champions. She won a Fatal 4-Way before Night of Champions and then was taken off the show due to COVID precautions. So they had Bayley versus Asuka instead. But almost immediately after that, Nikki Cross was drafted to Raw and never got her title match that she was owed. It's gone. It dematerialized. She obviously wasn't supposed to win that match versus Bayley. And they played out her storyline versus Alexa is finished. So now she's relegated to jobbing out on main event to Mia Yim, who is not even close to good enough to beat Dana Brooke. That's how far Nikki Cross has fallen. That's some shit, man. Whoa. Ricochet and T-Bar takes the mic and he goes, "We are not your enemy. We are your allies. You will join us or your existence will come to an end." So it's Ali still doing, calling the shots, but I like that they finally gave T-Bar a mic again, considering he was the absolute de facto leader of this faction before Ali became the leader. There's a backstage video from Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston, like, really having a mature reaction to losing to the Hurt Business, which I always like in my baby faces. I always like them to actually react to adversity as though they're good people. So I like that promo. MVP and Bobby Lashley versus Riddle and Jeff Hardy. I don't fucking care. They're obviously setting up probably Lashley versus Riddle at Royal Rumble, but only because I think Lashley's going to hurt Jeff Hardy at some point in the next month. And so Riddle will be up for revenge. I think that's how they're going to play this. It's certainly not going to be a triple threat match because they're playing up the Riddle and Jeff Hardy friendship too much. So yeah, Lashley hits hits the hurt lock on him, and that's it. Yep. So Elias is in the ring with Jackson Ryker, noted asshole and noted bigot and noted racist, noted fascism supporter, Jackson Ryker. It is a good thing that Elias has a bodyguard now who stops people from interrupting him. It is a bad thing that that bodyguard is being played by Jackson Ryker. Both of those things can be true. Ryker has a scheduled match versus Grand Metalik. Again, I don't know that they're doing this on purpose. Noted racist Jackson Ryker appears to only punch people who are of a different race than him. It's just a weird thing. You don't have to do that. Grand Metalik is one of the greatest wrestlers of the last 20 years. You wouldn't know it, but he is. Jackson Ryker wins a squash. So Randy Orton burned a man to death in the middle of the ring at TLC. The match was a Firefly Inferno match, and there was fire all around the ring. Both men were wearing more clothing than they usually wrestle in, so it was like a little fake out. At one point, there were deciding who was going to push who into a wall of flames. And it ended up being Randy pushing the Fiend back into the flames. And he was lit on fire. And the match is over when you get lit on fire. That's it. Match is over. The Fiend lost. The back of his coat was aflame. His one of his pant legs was on fire. Randy backed away after lighting him on fire, ran into the ring. The Fiend followed him, rushed after him, and got hit with an RKO, which knocked him out cold, which I thought was weird because the Fiend doesn't get knocked out cold by anything. Not anymore. That's not a thing that's happened to the Fiend in a long time. So the Fiend is out cold, laying on his back. The match has been won. It's over. You lit a guy on fire. The flames are out now, but you won. You caught him on fire. You won. The match is over. Everything that happens after now is murder. Because Randy Orton goes out and gets a gas can and dumps gasoline all over the unconscious body of the Fiend. Now, the Fiend is a demon clown, but he's not. Because they keep talking about how it's the Fiend Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt. So we all know that it's actually Bray Wyatt under the mask. Now, he's insane, and he believes he is the Fiend, some weird demon clown, but that doesn't change the fact that it's actually a person. It's a real man. Bray Wyatt, who ostensibly is laying out cold in the middle of the ring. And Randy Orton goes out and gets a gas can and dumps gasoline all over him. Then he goes back out and gets a match. And then he drops a match, a lit match, onto the unconscious body of the Fiend. Well, it's not, though. Like, it's a dummy that they've cleverly set up there in a pre-taped match. He catches on fire, and it burns. It just burns up. And so Randy Orton commits murder via immolation. And we just go off the air as Randy Orton gets out of the ring and hits the pose. I murdered a man via setting him on fire, and then I got to hit my pose. It was absurd. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was absurd. Before this happens, right? When it's just Samoa Joe and Michael Cole, and not Michael Cole, Samoa Joe and Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton all, as Randy's going out and getting the gas can. Oh, what's this, Randy? Randy, think twice. You don't want to do this, Randy. It's okay. You won the match. Don't worry, Randy. Stop it, Randy. Please, Randy. Oh, he's dumping gas. That's gasoline. That is gasoline they are pouring all over the body of the Fiend. The Fiend, you better wake up now, Fiend. Like, at any point, any one of the three of you, or how about a combination of all three of you, could stop this. Like, aren't you right there? Like, couldn't you? Couldn't anybody? Isn't there somebody? Don't you have security? Officials? WWE officials? Referees? Anybody could come down there and stop this man from being murdered on your network. But they don't. So then, he's standing there, after having covered him in gasoline, holding out a lit match, and says, and Byron Saxton says, Randy, don't do it, Randy. Randy, do something else. I just the idea of, like, if you were about to see a man, like, I don't know, like, throw a puppy off a bridge, and the thing that you thought that you should say to that man is not, don't throw that puppy, or stop, or hey, or whatever, but the thing that you said to the man about to throw a puppy off the bridge is, do something else. And I just love the idea of Randy hearing Byron say, do something else, and he goes, oh yeah, I should do something else. And he pulls out a little book, starts to read. Like, what are you gonna? I'm gonna dance a jig. What are the other things he could have thought to do in that moment? Do something else, Randy. Just killed me, Byron Saxton. What a fucking useless. Do something else. So they burned the Fiend to death. Now the Fiend is coming back. Obviously, it's the fucking WWE. Nothing's permanent. Nothing matters. Like, who cares, right? So we all know the Fiend's coming back. It's just a matter of when. And here's how we know the Fiend's not dead. Some people were like, oh, now they killed the Fiend. No, they didn't. Here's how we know that. Because Randy Orton wasn't arrested last night in his home. We all saw him cover a man in gasoline and light him on fire, which would kill a person. And it wasn't like WWE officials rushed to the ring with fire extinguishers and put out the flames, and then he was taken to a local medical facility where he had third-degree burns over 90% of his body. He had smoke inhalation, and his lungs had actually been cauterized. Some bullshit like that. No, there was nothing. Like, there was no medical update. That was it. So what happened? Randy walks down to the ring on Monday night and says, right here. It was right here where... If it was right there where you burned him, wouldn't there be a big charred spot where you burnt him to ashes, is what they say. So he, like, burnt into nothingness. Like, you cremated a man. Is that what happened? Because where's the body? Where are the remains? What happened? Did you burn a man to death? Or did, like, he vaporize after he got hot enough and then he went back to hell or whatever? Like, what was the aftermath? Did somebody have to clean up the mess after you murdered a man by setting him on fire? Who are those people? Charlie Caruso should get an interview with the janitor at Tropicana Field. Who cleaned up after the murder? I would like to know. Because you murdered a man when you set him on fire. Isn't that illegal?
They're like, well, he had to do it. That's how you win the match.
No, the match was won when the Fiend got lit on fire before. That was the end of the match. Everything that happened after that was just extracurricular activities. Like, Randy should have come out, and then the police should have shown up and arrested him on TV for murdering a guy. Like, remember how I get fucking upset that Sheamus committed all sorts of felonies when he stole Jeff Hardy's car and then framed him for the vehicular manslaughter of Elias? All of those things. Assaulted Jeff Hardy. All those things. And he was never arrested for it. And now Elias believes still to his core that it was Jeff Hardy who did it. And we're never going to tie up those loose ends. This is so much worse. We all saw Randy Orton murder a man. And there's no consequences for it whatsoever. Well, I won't say that. Because he does say that that he, even now, I can see it. Even now, I can smell it. But what you can smell? You can still smell lingering in the air the scent of charred flesh. You are a fucking twisted dude, Randy Orton. He says he can hear the Fiend gasping for his last breath as the fire grew hotter. Now, if you light a guy on fire who is even unconscious, I'm pretty sure he would wake up and start screaming. So that's a weird deal. Now, Orton gets out of the ring when the lights start going off. And then... there's a reddish purple light and there's some fog and Alexa Bliss is there. She's swinging on a swing set. So the lights go out and they come back up 5 seconds later and they put a fucking swing set in the ring with a slide. And Alexa Bliss, who everybody on Reddit is trying to tell me isn't like being portrayed as a child. She's a fucking kid. She's like five. Like she's five. And she's on a swing set. They're sexualizing her as they're infantilizing her sexuality or sexualizing her infantileness. I mean, it's the company that's doing the fucking Buddy Murphy angle, or are they still? Because we haven't seen them in a while. So are you expecting somebody else? We haven't seen her in a few weeks. He built this for me. Let's just call it Alexa's Playground. So is this the new thing? No Firefly Funhouse for a while? Just going to be Alexa's Playground? She's going to be swinging on a swing set every now and then? You're probably worrying where he is now. He could be anywhere. And then she listens to all kind of stupid things. He could be at a tanning salon. He could be at the beach. I mean, he doesn't get sunburned. Ha, 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 ha. He could be at his favorite restaurant eating his favorite food, barbecue. Ha, 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 ha. It was almost like the Fiend was absorbed into the mat. Like, okay, almost like? Or was he? Like, I know the cameras turned off and we went away from TLC. Like, we just watched Randy Orton murder a man. Hi, I'm Steve Austin. Welcome to Broken Skull Sessions. Like, There was no buffer zone between watching a man get murdered by fire and, "Hi, I'm Steve Austin." Like, there was no buffer zone at all. We went right from one to the other. But after we cut away from that, what happened? There's a big hole there. Did people try to save Bray's life? If not, why not? What happened to the body, to the remains? Did you really just let him burn to ash? That seems irresponsible. So did he get absorbed into the mat, or is he in a burn ward somewhere? There's too many things that you haven't addressed yet. Come on, guys. If he is home now, but if he ever leaves home, he might come to Alexis Playground. And it'll be like unlike anything you've seen before. So people are like, is this teasing a new Bray Wyatt character? I'm like, no, it's not. He's just going to be the Fiend, but like the mask will be burned. Like it'll be like a Freddy Krueger type mask. Like, I think that's what they're going to do. Because I'm pretty sure they've sold a lot of Fiend merchandise. So they figure like if they're going to keep the same basic character, because people like watching that shit, maybe they'll just change the mask and then people have to buy another mask, I think is what they're going to do. I don't think they're abandoning the Fiend character yet. I just don't. I think they're going to run that shit into the ground. Yeah, I don't understand. Like they cut away from Bliss and Orton, and then they're gone. And then the announcer's like, I don't even know how to begin to explain what we just saw. You saw Alexa Bliss being a creepy kid talking to Orton. You can explain Orton murdering a guy on your network, but not being arrested for it. But you can't explain a weird little segment. Like, come on, guys. So Asuka got a jobber entrance for this tag match, which is a good sign. Peyton Royce and Lacey Evans are in the back. And Blonde Not Charlie is talking to him about stuff. They just put Peyton Royce into this tag match, into this tag team with Lacey Evans, and already she wants out. I got them this title shot. Evans is trying to be, oh, you nasty, nasty? Well, nasty, nasty, and a nasty, nasty, and a nasty. And Peyton's like, that's fucking stupid, which, good for you, Peyton, it is. But this match doesn't, I don't, it doesn't matter. Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce are not on the same page. Wonder of wonders. They never know how to book a goddamn tag match without one of the tag teams not being on the same page. Peyton Royce, who, like, it looks as though she's, like, after the interview, when they start to walk out, she walks back to Blonde Not Charlie and says, I got us this match. I did. Me. So they're trying to make her seem more important, I guess. And then she taps out to the figure eight. So thanks for coming, Peyton. Enjoy your singles push. As you tapped out to the figure eight. Like, you could have had Lacey tap out to the figure eight. But nope. This is where I love it. There's a last half hour of the show still to come. And I got nothing to say about it. Like, I do, but not really. It's a cheap, easy joke to make about a bad thing, and then we're done. The main events of Raw are usually just utterly forgettable bullshit, and this is no different. All through the night, earlier in the night, Sheamus again got nudged gently by Keith Lee when he was drop kicked by AJ Styles. And Sheamus wants to murder Keith Lee about this. And Drew's trying to make peacemaker about everything. So they have a holiday street fight. It's a street fight where everything goes. You can do whatever you want. Of course, Omos is out there and he doesn't fucking do anything because it's a street fight. So why would he? It's Miz and Morrison and AJ with Omos out there, but not doing anything versus Drew and Sheamus and Keith Lee. And Keith Lee and Sheamus don't like to get along. So that's the thing. Like 7 minutes into the street fight, it's a street fight. Everyone's standing on the apron holding the tag ropes because it's the most mannerly street fight I've ever seen. Eventually, someone gets hit with a present. Some candy cane kendo sticks come out. Eventually, like, somebody gets thrown into a bunch of presents. People go through tables. Like, does the rockabye drop to Morrison through a table.
Here's the deal. It's a holiday street fight. You got to get in the Christmas spirit. So instead of like a vicious no DQ hardcore battle,
it's where you get together with your opponents and you wish them peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Cause you got to get in the Christmas spirit. It's all about the giving, not the getting. It's about love for your fellow man, which is why nobody fucking decided to have a fucking hardcore street fight. Eventually, Keith Lee wins and hits Miz with a spirit bomb. After the bell, the winners stand tall, but Sheamus hits Lee with a brogue kick. And so Drew yells at Sheamus about being an asshole. And that's it. So that's the last half hour of the episode is just a really shitty holiday street fight. Like, they did not put any effort into that. Like, you could have done a lot of things coming out of TLC with that, but they didn't do anything. So there you go. That's TLC for you. And the Raw after TLC. I'll talk more about the SmackDown side of things when I do the thing for the, you know, the Christmas episode. We'll talk about that not on Christmas, but on the day after, as is per usual. Again, if you have not watched the Christmas special of Sour Graps, I highly recommend it. It was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys have a great Christmas. I'll be back in here tomorrow night, I think, to do the NXT review. But this is the last Sour Graps before the Yuletide. So everybody make sure you leave a peppermint stick for old Saint Nick hanging on the Christmas tree. That's a callback from the Christmas episode, which if you've seen it, you get. If you haven't, you should watch the episode. Faithful, I love you. Merry Christmas.